Forever Dog.
Welcome to another episode of Best Show Bests, the greatest hits of the best show, with me, your host, Tom Sharpling. If you like what you hear, make sure you join us every Tuesday night on Twitch at 6 p.m. Pacific for a brand new episode of the Best Show, featuring callers, celebrity guests, live music, and plenty of surprises. Enjoy! Okay, hello, Best Show.
Hey, is this me?
Yes.
I gotta see this Neil Young movie, right? My God.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's something else. Pretty.
I can't wait to see the footage of them recording the song about Johnny Rotten.
That will not be in. That was not a part of Harvest. That was Russ Never Sleeps.
He has more than one album?
Who does? Neil Young? Neil Young has over 40 albums. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
Why this? You thought Neil? You thought Harvest was his only album?
I thought the other one was.
Okay. Russ Never Sleeps.
Yeah, I thought that was. Yeah.
You thought that was his only record?
I did. Yeah, he's like a heavy metal person, right?
Is Neil Young a heavy? He's not a heavy metal.
Like hard rock.
Well, I mean, he does dip into hard rock. He does folk music. He does a little bit of everything.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you don't recognize my voice, do you?
No, I don't. Who is this?
It's Corey Harris from Mother 13.
Oh my God. Corey Harris.
Yeah.
Wow. Long time.
Ruffy?
Let me just tell people who are listening, if you don't know who Corey Harris is, Corey Harris, he was in a band in the early 2000s called Mother 13, which was you were proudly self-describing yourself as alternative rock.
Oh yeah. All the influences of all the cool bands, Pixies, Black Flags, all that stuff.
It's only Nirvana. Black Flag is not plural. It's not black.
It's Black Flags.
It's not Black Flags. No, it's Black Flag. Oh. Yeah.
Crap. Okay.
You thought it's like Black Flags? No, it's Black.
I thought it was like a bunch, like a group of pirate ships and like a cluster, and they would have several Black Flags.
No, it's not. It's just it's called Black Flag. Okay. Corey, you called and you would talk about a lot of sponsorship stuff. All that was a big part of who the festivals and the bills Mother 13 were on. And then you had a really crazy incident happen in like the mid 2000s where you were trying to play a concert on Mount Everest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a complete nightmare.
Yeah. It was a disaster.
Like terrible.
Yeah. It was real bad.
Well, you know, you're here, you're still around. I'm really curious to know what you've been up to these days.
Oh my God. It feels like I've lived several lives since we last spoke, and I'll get to what I've been up to in a bit, but I just wanted to ask you something. Before you rudely interrupted him, a caller last week sang a couple lines of a song that I think affected me as much as that Neil Young film affected you.
Okay.
I didn't catch the name of the song, but it went something like, "Tonight the street's on fire, it's a real Death Wish 7. Who is that?
Well, that's the words are off for the second part. I think people are getting the lyrics to Jungle Land by Bruce Springsteen wrong.
Oh.
It's not a real Death Wish 7.
Oh, I thought it was about the movie Death Wish 7.
I don't think there is a Death Wish 7 for it to even be about.
Well, there should be.
Those are two very different things. I think there should be also.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it does have the greatest line, probably second only to "We like to send out a mailer." Mm-hmm. I think you know what the line is, right?
Death Wish 7 or Death Wish 3?
In Death Wish 3.
Well, 3 is to me the gold standard.
Right, right.
I'm sure we're thinking about the same line.
Would you say it?
I'll say
it. You can censor yourself.
Oh, okay. Bennett, the owner of a cab company, the city is under attack, and right. He is played by Martin Balsam, who is an old man at this point. And he goes, the gang is attacking his apartment building, and he goes to his closet and pulls out this old machine gun.
Right.
And he starts, the gang is down. And they're trying to climb up the fire escape, whatever. And he grabs it and he points it at them. But then it jams. He can't fire it. And then you hear this loop line, which is clearly a loop line. It's just,
right.
It's not working. Kill the MF-er.
God, even hearing you say it censored, it still just really gives me those tingles.
You get tingles from hearing me do a censored version of a line from a kind of dumb movie.
Hey, it's a great film, and it's a great line.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I wanted to chime in on tonight's topic, and then I just realized I misread what it is, and I thought the topic was something else. So I had something prepared for the topic I misread. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what did you think it was?
I thought it was uncomfortable encounters with FPs, famous people.
Uncomfortable encounters with famous people.
Yes.
Why? What would the story be? If that was the topic, what would be the story you'd tell?
Well, it was back in 2005, and Mother 13 was playing in St. Louis on the Huggies Fall into Softness tour. And so I'm in the hotel lobby, and I look over to my left. Standing right there is James Caan.
James Caan, the movie star.
Yes. Wow. I couldn't believe it. I don't know what he was in town for. But I needed to talk to him, right? It was just like you had to talk with Patti Smith from Scandal that day.
It was Patti Smith from, well, Patti Smith is Patti Smith.
Wait, you said that to the Patti Smith, not Patti Smith?
Yeah.
O-M-God-ly.
Yeah.
Oh, this whole time I thought it was Patti Smith.
It's Patti Smith.
That brings the old cringe factor up a little bit, right?
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, of course it was, because I had a thing in an elevator where I encountered Patti Smith, the legend, the music legend Patti Smith, and I asked if she had ever seen Humble Pie back in the day. Didn't go well.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, James Caan. So
yeah.
I go over and I start gushing. I'm just saying how much I loved him in The Godfather, Rollerball, Brian Song, Elf. Mm-hmm. And he shakes my hand, and just then his cab pulls up, and I excitedly say, "Oh my God, Mr. Caan, please have a nice day. It was so nice to meet you." And he looks me up and down real slowly with like almost this kind of disdain that you would have for a criminal. And he goes, "Yeah, you too." And he did that thing where someone looks back at you and you can almost hear them thinking, you jag off. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
I couldn't believe it. Even the doorman there, the concierge, you know, at the hotel, he turns to me and goes, what the F was that?
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was the most condescending look he'd ever seen anyone give anyone. And Frank Zappa stayed at that hotel 5 times.
Wow. That's big in regard to that. So he was like, yeah, you too.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you piece of filth. I couldn't believe it. I mean, my hair was, you know, I was in prime, you know, early aughts, kind of like emo-ish, sort of that cool emo haircut that I guess people don't think is cool now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like power bangs hanging out, you know?
Sure. So, sure. Like, yeah. But that shouldn't be enough for him to be that mad at you.
I know. I know. So I still don't know what the problem was, but anyway, getting to your question, about what I've been up to, oh boy, where to start? You know, after the tragic events of Mother 13's 2006 Mount Everest disaster, which I am legally barred from talking about by the estates of, Buddy Guy, Ricky the Sherpa, my own brother, 14 members of the Polyphonic Spree, and a literal cavalcade of others. I was lost. I was floundering really hard, mm-hmm. real bad. Okay. Yeah. So I was so distraught. I became obsessed with bodybuilding, if you can believe that.
Bodybuilding?
Yes. Yeah. Just nonstop working out. You know, I was at the gym pretty much every waking moment, and I got so strong I was barred from my gym, the Pump Palace, because I was lifting the weight machines in addition to the weights.
So if you were to, like, if I'm following you correctly, you're saying you went to the gym, you got so good at bodybuilding,
mm-hmm.
that if there's like a machine that, like, where you sit on it and you, like, push your legs against the flat, like the you push out to stretch your to like to exercise right. your legs.
Mm-hmm.
And you set the different weights on it where you can be 10 pounds, 20 pounds, on and on. You just pick the whole machine up.
Yeah. The weights weren't enough.
So you're literally lifting. That's insane.
I know. I know. I was just obsessed, and I was so in that zone. I even won 2 Golden Greasy Boys at the Quint Cities Bodybuilding and Tiny Bikini Brief Expo. Was that good?
Well, you look, I didn't know that the award mm-hmm. was a greasy boy.
A golden greasy boy.
A golden greasy boy.
Yeah, 2 of them.
So you won 2 Golden Greasy Boys for your weightlifting skills.
Yeah. And it was going great. I was thinking about going to nationals, but then my manager / trainer Rupert, he started me on this not yet approved growth hormone that Kern Pharmaceuticals was about to produce. It was called Monster Milk, kind of like that wonderfully named product Muscle Milk that you see in your local convenience store, right?
Yeah. Muscle Milk.
Yeah. Yeah. So Monster Milk was supposed to give really fast recovery and build a lot of mass really quickly. And boy, did it do that, but it also really lived up to its name.
Which is Monster Milk. How so?
Yeah. Well, 3 weeks after starting it, I was seeing just incredible results, but it literally turned me into a monster.
What do you mean? Like just you were full of like it was like a chemical thing and you felt like more angry or something?
Tom, I don't know if you heard about those sightings back in, gosh, when was it? It was the late aughts or early teens. The sightings of a strange, flagrantly rabid man-wolf who was roaming the neighborhoods of Newbridge Knoll. Remember this at all?
I do. Yes, I completely forgot this.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking this opportunity right now to reveal that I, Corey Y. Harris, was the Newbridge Knoll man.
That was you.
Yes. Yeah. I do want to say I committed no crimes during that very weird time in my life. I just couldn't sleep. So, you know, I'd be wide awake at 3 a.m. and I'd go out night lumbering.
I didn't know night lumbering was a thing.
Well, it didn't say it as a side effect on the bottle. You know, it did say heart stoppage and a couple other things like that. But in addition to that, I was having a hard time breathing because of the monster milk and the steroids that were in it. So I was also grunting while I was out lumbering. So I can understand how that scared a lot of people, you know, just seeing this hulking figure, you know, just making that noise.
And that's a creepy noise.
Yeah. So I'd like to apologize to everybody for that. And, you know, so after that, I couldn't go back to bodybuilding. You know, I couldn't hide the fact that I was on the juice, and yeah, because it was so transparent. You know, it was as transparent as Kumali hiding his superhero body under those stop making sense suits in this Chippendale series on Hulu. But
okay.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live. At the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
So anyway, it took me a year to get relatively back to normal because I was so swole.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so then I started to slowly return to music again.
So you got the bug for music again after you felt that the bodybuilding thing was not in the cards, is I guess what you're saying, right? Ultimately.
Yes. So I was extremely fortunate that my manager Rupert got me a record deal with Danube Records, which was the non-racist offshoot of Panzerfaust Records. And I ended up making five solo albums for them between 2012 and 19.
Okay, they were the non... That's... What was the label called?
Danube,
okay.
Yeah.
So, but when you were making... Look, I'm not... I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm.
So you're on a label that was like a hate speech label, but
no,
you...
it was an offshoot. We had no, I mean, I never saw any, I had no real connection with any of those people. I didn't really interact with any of them.
Okay.
So it was its own thing.
So if you like visited the offices where they had their own office or what, I'm not.
Yeah, it was more of like a hut, almost an extravagant lean-to that was on the Panzerfaust lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they kind of kept that to themselves.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All
so
right, look,
so I make these records, and it was a tumultuous period for me emotionally and sexually, and so basically I had five wives that inspired each album.
Wow. So you would get remarried.
I'd just be completely obsessed with this new person. But, so basically the first album was called A Brand New Beginning. And that was about my return to my then estranged wife, Sheila Larson. And we split. Then I put another album out called I'm Finally Where I Belong. That was about my second wife, Jasmine. Then a third one was called I Found My Forever Person. That was about Deirdre One.
Okay.
A Fresh Start, which was about Cheyenne. And then at long last, I'm Finally Complete. That was about Deirdre Two, who I'm estranged from right now.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Maybe you might want to not deal in such absolutes with these record titles.
Well, I don't know. I just get so excited, and it's like, you know.
Oh, it's clear you're getting excited. I'm not questioning whether you're excited or not.
When I'm into something, I'm fully into it, whether sure. It's like Scientology or NXIVM.
Okay, NXIVM was one of your really NXIVM.
Oh yeah. He wouldn't brand me.
Keith wouldn't brand you.
Yeah. Oh my God, we would be up all night just talking about Zeppelin.
You and Keith.
Yeah.
Talk about Led Zeppelin all night.
Guess who his favorite member was?
Of Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
John Paul Jones.
Kind of everything you need to know about him right there, right?
That says everything. That's
yep.
It's very telling.
Yeah. Yep. So eventually I got cut loose by the label because Rupert, you know, of course dropped the ball but the label also pulled a choke job. And they also insisted that I use the same singing voice on each album, which I didn't want to do because I'm an artist and I like to mix it up. Right.
Well, you like to mix up your vocal style.
Yeah. Like, you know, one album I sang in kind of a higher register. And I'm trying to remember like one of those lines. It was something like, I'll never find another lover who knows half as many positions as you. Ugh. So that was just one, you know, one side of my vocalizing, you know, that was one album like that. And then, another one had, you know, it was more like from the lower register, kind of from the gut,
okay.
You know, and there was a song that went something like, you're too pretty to have to earn your own money, but you know he'll never love you like I can, even if he reads that book.
Even if he reads that book, what is that about?
Well, later in the song, I reveal that the book is the Kama Sutra for Dummies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was more of like a deeper, more slightly more like. Maybe kind of soulful voice.
Oh yeah. But yes, you know, speaking of, I just finished this new song and it's probably the best thing I've ever done. And I gotta say the subject matter is very deep. I mean, it's even deep for me.
Okay. All right. What is it? Can you tell us about it?
Well, you know, sometimes, you know how like you'll be thinking about the greatest night of your life when you were young, you were doing something super cool. Maybe in your case, you were first in line to see Smokey and the Bandit 3, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird one to say that's what I'm all about, but.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I just seem like something you would.
It's very, it's oddly specific.
I don't know. So, but basically, you know, the idea is that, you know, on one side of this town, that's going on. Young person having the greatest time ever.
Mm-hmm.
Across town, some old coot lying in a hospital bed, taking his last breath, wondering if he lived a good, worthy life, right?
Okay.
It's heavy, isn't it?
That is, that's a deep sentiment, yeah.
You'll love the chorus. It's, don't you know your happiest night was the worst one for someone else? It's the dichotomy of life. Pretty cool, right?
It's the what of life?
The dichotomy.
The dichotomy.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like the two very different sides of one thing.
Okay, let me think. The ditch atone. You mean just saying like it's one is all the way over here.
Yeah.
And the other one's all the way over there, and they're very, yeah. the difference between the two is notable. Am I? It's worth it. It just seems interesting how different the two could be.
Yeah, that's a definition of dichotomy.
Dichotomy. I would say you're probably trying to say the word dichotomy.
No, it's. I looked it up. It's spelled D-I-C-H-O-T-O-M-Y. Mm-hmm.
That definitely is the word dichotomy.
Oh, Fuddruckers! Oh no!
What?
I just sent the song out in an email blast to 150 of today's hottest tastemakers.
Okay. Like, yeah. That's, well, and you said, and it's got dichotomy in it.
Yes, all over it. I sent it to, like, God, who did I send it? Gwen Stefani, Pete Davidson, Gerard Cosloy, Aubrey Plaza, Fat Mike, Dr. Oz, Questlove, Dr. Luke, Thin Mike, Eddie Trunk, Herschel Walker, Jeff Tweedy, Jack Antonoff, Charles Barkley, Lee Ronaldo, Nancy Pelosi, Phoebe Bridgers, Jeff Bridges, Myron Coley, Mark Knopfler, and Kevin Smith, just to name a couple. Oh boy.
That's a wide-ranging list there.
Well, I wanted it to get out there to as many people as possible, and now I want the exact opposite.
You wanna take it back.
I do want to take it back. Do 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 do.
Well, what's that?
Oh, please. Are you serious?
Oh, okay. I got it.
Take it back. Do 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 do.
Yeah. That's Rocky. That's the opening of Rocky.
He's the brother that should have starred in that movie.
Frank Stallone, who is Frank's Rocky's brother, Sylvester Stallone's brother. Frank Stallone is in the opening credits of Rocky singing around a flaming garbage can in Philadelphia.
I'll tell you.
Doing doo-wop.
God, how old was I when I saw that movie? Probably 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
I remember turning to my dad and saying at the end of the film, I said, the movie should have been about the doo-wop singer.
Sure. So Rocky, right? Well, it wouldn't be a boxing movie then necessarily, well, but.
No, it would have a doo-wop movie, and Rocky would have been like the secondary story there.
So like the doo-wop singer would have been like, and my brother is a boxer.
Yes. And there's also this element where Frank, he's also involved in the Philly mob, and he's a heavy, a collector, kind of like what Rocky becomes in Rocky II. And basically Frank, the doo-wop singer, the way he takes care of those who don't pay their bills is he stuffs their face in the flaming trash cans.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a different type of, yeah, that's different.
Yeah, well, could have been good, you know.
You ever, Corey, did you ever think about how it's 1976, 77, right? It's like Rocky?
Right.
That, why are those guys sitting, wouldn't they be singing around a garbage can? Wouldn't they be singing like
Nazareth or something.
Exactly. They'd be singing Hair of the
now,
Dog.
Exactly. Now you're dealing with a son of a bitch.
Like, that makes much more sense if they were sitting around that garbage can singing like, ho, 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 it's magic.
Right, yeah.
But who was doing doo-wop in the 70s like that? What young people were singing doo-wop?
Well, it's the same kids that were super excited when they went to see a band like Styx, and they play songs like Roll Over Beethoven.
Right? Uh-huh. Yeah, the Styx they really knew their audience so well.
Yeah. Or a 12-year-old who gets home from the mall with that brand new copy of Peter Criss's solo album. Oh my God, it's the Cat, and he's wild and he rocks and drops that needle on and it sounds like the Persuasions.
Yeah, it's knowing your audience, and I guess they knew their audience.
But getting back to me, right?
Of course, let's get back. Core, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Without a doubt, of course. Let's.
Right. So after my solo career went kaput, I was really scrambling for dat green, right?
For dat green. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So and seven kids ain't cheap, no matter what anyone says. And these kids were all massive eaters too.
So you got seven kids at this point.
Yeah, and so money, super tight, even with my first child, Sky Stalker, being the star of those Gus Brennan's frozen custard commercials. Do you remember those?
When the Ratman first baseman did those. Yeah, well, I do remember those as they were fun.
Well, some people thought they were fun. Some thought they were really terrifying. Basically, Sky Stalker played the custard creep, this malevolent specter who gleefully knocks custard cones out of kids' hands. Mm-hmm. And all the spots ended with Gus Brennan decapitating the custard creep with a swing of this baseball bat samurai sword hybrid that he carried in a giant holster. And as far as I know, it's one of the few, if only, commercials Trent L. Strauss ever directed.
I didn't know Trent L. Strauss directed those. The horror director Trent L. Strauss directed those commercials. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So I was really getting, worried, and I couldn't sleep at all because I was worried about, providing for my family. It's like REM sleep. I was lucky if I got Kilkenny Cat sleep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Hey, I want to say happy birthday to Peter Buck. It's his birthday today, and I just saw that Warnock won Georgia, which is great news. Peter actually played on one of my solo albums.
Peter Buck played on one of your on a Corey Harris solo album.
Yes, but he asked not to be credited after he heard the final mixes with the lyrics clearly audible.
Okay. Well, was there an offending lyric, or he just didn't like the general tone or perspective? What was the problem?
I think his quote was they were just sexually weird and off-putting.
Okay. Well, this yeah. Okay. That's sure.
Yeah. Anyway, praise Jah. I got a gig singing jingles.
Okay. That's respectable work.
You probably heard some of my work, actually.
Okay. Like, what were some of the jingles you sang?
Okay. Bring your buns down to Snodgrass Bakery and snatch a big old sack of our buns. Remember that?
I don't remember that one.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you remember this one. It was for Peter's Hot Dogs.
Okay. Peter's Hot Dogs.
Yeah. Get a piping hot wiener at Peter's. Peter's wieners are piping hot.
That's triggering something.
Yeah, I bet. Then there was one that was, I've lived, I've lost, I've paid the cost, but it was worth it to get a mouthful of that Chisholm. It was for Chisholm's butter.
Ugh, that's a troubling one.
I know, yeah. And then there was one, probably the biggest one was, Bring me some of that thick gray pizza, the greatest pizza in town. And they spelled greatest G-R-E-Y-T-E-S-T. Remember that one?
Well, I can see that.
For Gray's Pizza.
Yeah, I mean, sing it again. Do you mind?
Bring me some of that thick gray pizza, the greatest pizza in town.
Nobody wants to hear gray associated with any, almost any gravy would be the only thing I'd say maybe right. is say
yeah, true.
Gray.
True.
But I can't think of any other food where you'd be like, is it gray? Yeah, that's a rough one.
What was even rougher was when I got blacklisted from the jingle industry.
You got blacklisted from the jingle industry. How so?
Well, I went off on this copywriter during a session for the Muffler Czar.
Okay.
I just lost it. He had all these kind of dumb notes, and I got so mad. It was straight out of that Mork from Orson tape that was going around back in the day. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Remember? It was like, the guy goes, and now under pressure, under protest is beef burgers. We will serve no something before it's time. Remember that?
Oh,
it was
Orson Welles.
Who?
Orson Welles, the legendary director
from the Love Boat.
Well, he did a lot of things for money. For dat green, ooh, I guess you could say.
Dish. Really? Dish.
I'm not going to dish. There's no, no dish. I'm just telling you about the guy's career.
I was getting all excited.
What you wanted? I'm not going to dish about.
Okay. All right. So anyway, the engineer had the tape rolling while I was freaking out. And that D-hole gave copies of the tape to a lot of people.
So it's you having a meltdown in the studio.
Yeah, it's called the dirty diaper tape.
Ugh. Uh-huh. And what, like, what kind of things went down on that tape?
Well, it was during my second evangelical period, and I promised my pastor I wouldn't swear, so I kept calling the ad guy a dirty diaper.
Oh. Wow, okay. I think I might have, this sounds familiar.
Yeah, but I got to say, I'm a little myth that never got the heat that Neil Hamburger or Two Bar or Shut Up Little Man tapes got.
Mm-hmm. So you're so you're actually mad. You're mad that it got leaked, but you're also mad that it didn't go far enough in its its popularity.
Well, look, you didn't hear it from me. Ever since the Jerky Boys movie, all the outlets for tapes like that are in the pocket of Big Prank.
I did not know that.
Yeah, these things, they only get out, they only get heat if Johnny and Kamal sign off on it.
So they are the gatekeepers, is what you're saying.
I'm not sure why they didn't like it. I don't know. You tell me.
I wish I could help you out there, Corey. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Anyway, so then late 2018, I get this call. It's insane. I become the lead vocalist in Allie Score's A Flock of Seagulls.
Allie Score, the drummer from A Flock of Seagulls.
Yes. For those of your listeners who don't know, Flock of Seagulls, very, very influential synth band from the early 80s, formed by two brothers, Mike Score, and who was the singer and the keyboardist, and Allie was the drummer. And so by this point, you know, many decades later, Mike and Allie hated each other.
Okay.
And they both had competing flocks.
So you were But the thing is, Mike Score was the singer.
Right.
Ali Score was the drummer of the one you were in.
Yeah. The drummer, but kind of the brains behind it, I was soon to find out.
Okay.
Anyway, Harry and William level drama with these two cats.
And you were surprised by this? Were you caught in the middle of it, or was it?
Well, I'll give you an example of like how intense this feud was.
Uh-huh.
Mike got to a club we were playing before we arrived and rigged a bucket of whale vomit up in the lighting truss and timed it so it soaked Allie during his Simmons drum solo.
Oh my God.
It was sick. And it's like the big question, where did he get whale vomit?
That was the first Corey.
In Norman, Oklahoma.
I was going to say, where do you get it? Even if he was in a fishing village, I would wonder where you got actual whale vomit.
Right. It was sick. Stage was so slippery. So in retaliation, Ali sent Mike a human cadaver stuffed with smashed pieces of a synthesizer.
My God.
It was sick.
That is the definition of sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of the reason I'm calling.
Oh, okay. You mentioned a human. I haven't heard from you in years.
Right.
Why are you calling me now?
I'm always looking for new opportunities. And I really think I can channel my experience and what I saw with the Score Brothers into a pretty accurate depiction of Gigi Allen in this biopic that was just announced the other day. Have you heard about this thing?
A Gigi Allen biopic?
Yes.
Okay.
I know you used to have the thinnest of connections to the music business or the film business.
The film business.
And I was wondering if you could get my sizzle reel in front of the director, Jonas Ackerman, who I think is one of the Jonas Brothers.
I'm pretty positive he isn't.
Ugh, okay.
What is on your... Well, first of all, I take offense to you saying I have the thinnest of connections to the entertainment industry. That's...
Well, I don't know. I haven't... Yeah, I'm sorry if that offended
it's,
you.
It's fine. It's fine. But so you're... What is on your sizzle reel?
Well, a lot of those jingles I told you about. And also... I didn't want to toot my own horn too much, but I starred in a movie of the week back in 2015 for Shout True Crime.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know you had the acting bug to this degree.
Oh yeah. It was called The Rub.
The Rub. Now what is The Rub all about?
It was based on a true story about this guy named Billy who it's just an odd story. He had his mind so blown by this hot stone massage that he got that he goes back and takes the masseuse hostage and forces her to massage him. Nothing dirty at all. Like no bathroom area stuff. He just couldn't afford to keep going back. So he just figured he would hold her hostage. And so he could get a free massage, which is insane, right?
No, that's a terrible thing. It's a disgusting crime.
Yes, but also, as you can imagine, Billy got so relaxed during this massage that he dropped his gun, and he ended up being taken into custody by the police.
Uh huh.
The massage part is only a very small portion of the story. The rest of the film is flashbacks to Billy's childhood when he fell into a sewer drain and survived for 7 days by eating wet acorns.
Well, that sounds...
And
it's
interesting.
And you were Billy?
Yeah, I also played him as a 13-year-old.
Oh, okay. Well, this is weird now. You played him as an adult and as a 13-year-old.
Yeah, and I will say it was a flagrant bitch to hide my stubble.
For the sake of the movie.
Yeah, I've got Baldwin-level testosterone, so I was literally shaving after takes.
Like between, like you'd do a take and then you'd go straight up and shave.
Well, I was in the drain pipe, so they would bring the mirror and the shaving cream and the razor down to me.
Even stranger. I thought it was strange enough that you were shaving
right
on a film set while dressed as a child.
Yeah.
But it turns out you were in a drain pipe shaving.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure it was really difficult for the crew people too, watching this 35-year-old man dressed like Bobby Brady screaming at his soon-to-be ex-wife in Video Village.
That would be a hard one to swallow if for anybody who worked on that production, yeah.
I know, yeah. So, oh no.
What?
Oh no.
What?
Well, I guess what they say about the best show being the favored podcast of the two most unhinged brothers in synth pop is true.
Why is that?
It's the Score Brothers. They're I see them on my front lawn. They're out. They must have been listening, and they're just scaring. They're scaring at me. They're just staring at me, almost like the twins in The Shining.
Uh huh.
Oh, it's really off-putting.
So now you're telling me that they're united.
They are, yeah.
Okay.
United in their hatred for me, but you know what? Look, you sick a-holes. I'm going to make you guys run so far away that... Crap, I wish I had something clever in my quiver for this occasion. You would have think I would have thought of this by now, right? Just in case, like some sort of play on Iran.
Yeah, that you kind of.
Do you have anything I could say real quick? Is there another song? I can't remember any of the songs. There was one that was like "Wishing I Had a Photograph of You."
There's wishing. You're gonna be wishing that I didn't. Didn't unleash holy terror on you.
You're going to be wishing that I didn't leash your dog.
That you didn't. You're going to be wishing.
I'm going to be fishing. Say it again.
No, not fishing. Wishing. How about just go with this? Hey, you both. Okay, well, take the.
You bozos?
No, it did say both. Just listen for a second.
Just listen for a second.
I'm talking to you now.
Oh, me. Okay. Sorry.
Say, and hear me out first before you say this to them. Okay. Mike and Ollie, you are both going to know the score if you keep messing with me.
Mike and Ollie, you're both going to know the score when you keep messing with it.
No, if say it again. That's wrong. You got it wrong.
You got it wrong.
No, that I was telling you. Oh,
they're gone. They're gone.
Okay, well, that's good then.
They ran off.
Okay, well.
Oh, great. I just walked in my driveway, and they wrote something on my windshield, and so great.
Okay, well, what did they write?
Wankermobile.
Corey.
I gotta go.
Well, it was nice hearing from you. Don't
you too? Let's party sometime. Do you do coke?
What's that?
Let's party sometime. Do you do coke?
No, I don't.
Crap. Is Jason?
I don't believe so. I'm going to just say no on his behalf.
All right. Well, listen. I'll send you the new song I got. I'll change the pronunciation of the word. So. I'd love for you to play it sometime.
Well, maybe. We'll see.
All right. Sounds good. Okay.
All right. Happy holidays.
All right. Keep it clean, my man.
Okay. Be safe.
Bye.
Oh, that was a fun little blast from the past there. Corey Harris.
Wow.
The Best Show is produced in partnership with the Forever Dog Podcast Network. The show is hosted by Tom Sharpling and features John Worster, Michael Lisk, Jason Gore, and Pat Byrne. The show is produced and written by Jason Gore, Pat Byrne, Michael Lisk, Brett Davis, John Worster, and Tom Sharpling. The Best Show is executive produced by Tom Sharpling, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Co-executive produced by Jason Gore and Pat Byrne, segment producer Michael Lisk. The show is engineered and mastered by Andrew Gleason and Wesley Knapp. Graphic design, video editing, and social media by Brett Davis. Website and technical support by Martine Sellis. And the show is recorded at Forever Dog Studios in Los Angeles. Support The Best Show on Patreon over at patreon.com/thebestshow. And follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Best Show for Life. That's Best Show 4 Life. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.